This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to the January 13th, 2020 For Your Benefit radio show. We're here today with Karen Schaefer, certified financial planner par excellence. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. Happy New Year.
And the same to you. And I think we're all going to get an education with what Karen has to tell us, all of us, me included. And coming out of the box, New Year's resolution. What's the best and the easiest? You don't really have one size fits all. New Year's resolutions that financial planners share with their clients.
I'll draw back the curtain, Bob, and I'll tell you what's going on. You know, we all jump. All financial planners jump on this time of year because it's a time when people are open to focusing a little bit and getting some good habits into place. And that's really what we want it to be. We want it to be a habit. We want it to be something that we're unconsciously in the zone of making smart money decisions. So if I was really talking to a federal government employee right now, the easiest thing that will have the most impact is increasing your thrift contribution. And I know that some people are saying, you know, Karen, you can't get blood from a stone. We spend a lot in December and it's really, really hard. Or my favorite question so far of the new year, I had a 25-year-old on a webinar and she just said, I'm out. You know, I'm not making much money. This is my first job. I can't put more in. But everybody can decide to improve. So with a 25-year-old who's really living paycheck to paycheck still, the idea is you got to focus. How do we focus on your career? Who makes more money than you do? Who can be your mentor? What steps do you need? More education? Do you need more time? Is there a way that we could just rein in a little more discretionary spending for you? I did the numbers once. If I just gave up my Frappuccino Caramel Macchiato, just, you know, found $5 a day, I have an extra $50,000 in my thrift plan in a matter of 10 years. Now, of course, I have to go for growth, right? So even if you feel you don't have any money at all that you can increase your contribution, we're still going to focus on it and we're going to say, how can that happen? Now, some people do know. They're just a little casual about it and they've just been meaning to get around to increasing their thrift. Well, when that cost of living becomes effective, you know, we're going to get a little COLA. Somehow we made it all the way through 2019 without it. Let's just take 1%. I played with the numbers and you know where the numbers are. TSP.gov, just get on those little calculators, right? Even somebody who's not good at math can fill in the blank. If I put 1% more into my thrift and I had a $60,000 salary, that's going to be like $22 a paycheck. Everybody can put in $22 a paycheck and probably not notice it after the first time. But that $22 a pay, an extra 1% of somebody's $60,000 salary over the rest of their career is a huge, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars of I'm happier in retirement because I made that decision in January 2020.
Is this like jumping off the high dive? And we're going to, oh, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm
right.
Go do it, again.
It really wasn't the high dive. You know, it was an illusion. It was like the easiest thing in the world. Just take a little bit extra money, whatever you know sounds little to you, because it's relative, right? We've got people who are earning the big deal SES level, still not fully contributing to thrift. And we've got people just getting started thinking, you know, I'm not sure I can cover all of my bills. The only person I slow down a little bit when they've got that gung-ho, it's New Year's resolution, I'm going to put a little bit more money in my thrift plan, is somebody who's struggling with expensive debt. Not necessarily student loans. Some of the student loan debt is pretty inexpensive still. But somebody with a lot of student loan debt or somebody struggling with the credit cards. Then we got to find the sweet spot. How do we get the 5% in to get your match? And then really, really focus on paying down the debt. Anybody else, don't forget, 2020, we get to put a little bit more in, right? They increase the limits by $500. Yes. So don't be the ones coming to class saying, you know, nobody told me. I didn't know I could put in more. Then the New Year's resolution that some people should just adopt is TSP.gov. start your Monday with TSP.gov. What's the news? Right.
Okay. Here's a real life question.
Right.
For whatever reason, they ask me, and I shy away, and I'm not a financial planner. I think I understand a little bit about it, but there were probably six different debts, six different credit cards or whatnot, and you know, what do I do? And I said, well, if it were me trying to be a financial planner, find the one with the least balance and the highest credit amount or interest rate and pay that one first, and it will give you a good feeling. Maybe it isn't the highest interest rate, but you got one off the board. Now, that doesn't mean to go out and put another one back in.
Yeah. Well, I back it up just a little bit more. Sometimes people have six different credit cards, and but the outstanding balance on all of them in the aggregate doesn't really worry me too much. Sometimes people have one credit card, and the outstanding balance has me terrified and not sleeping at night on their behalf, right? So what I look at first is how long is it going to be before this person, even with a New Year's resolution to pay off credit card debt, is breathing more easily and has gotten the credit card behind them and is a little ahead of the game. So every emergency or every odd thing that happens doesn't mean the debt comes right back. And if it's more than 3 years, I say we've got to get more serious, because nobody gets 3 years without something happening that we didn't anticipate. And I'm a planner, right? Mm. But I'm not a psychic. So life is going to happen unannounced, good news, bad news, always involves money. If it looks like it's going to be 3 years with me being so focused, I'm not doing any discretionary spending, that's unrealistic. It's just absolutely unrealistic. So then we go to consumer credit counseling and or a part-time job. And sometimes for some people, their life situation is pretty easy to pick up a couple shifts at a restaurant over the weekend, or to do, they've actually got people asking them to do a little stuff for them on the weekend. And we take 100% of the part-time job money and just put it on the credit card. We got to speed this up. But if that's just not a possibility, I'm a single parent, a couple of kids, I'm already, my primary job is already taking me more than 40 hours a week. Then I have them call Consumer Credit Counseling, which is a national not-for-profit that has the ability to interface between you and the credit card company and say, look, we're going to get the money and we're going to pay you, credit card company, but because we're in the middle here and doing some coaching and taking some responsibility for helping this person get out of debt, this is what we want. We want all those late fees forgiven. We want the interest rate down to zero. We want that we'll get you your payment on time. And it has the effect of cleaning up the debt way, way faster.
What's the success rate with that?
You know, I've never looked into the success rate. The success rate I have with referring the right person is 100%. But here's the problem. Most people raise their hand for this kind of help too late. They've already stopped putting money in thrift. They've already taken money out of thrift to pay off debts. They've already borrowed from other places that are even more outrageously expensive. And then when I call Consumer Credit Counseling and say, hey, I think I might have a candidate, what would you advise? And they say bankruptcy. So that's why my threshold is, let's not wait until you've been missing payments all over the place. Let's not wait until you're losing sleep at night. Let's just do a little arithmetic here. If we can't get this credit card paid off in 3 years, what's the plan? Because neither one of us are going to go the next 36 months without a surprise, unplanned, unexpected expense. And that means it's going to take more than 3 years. Right? And more than 3 years to be struggling with the debt and underfunding thrift. I mean, the ripple effect is you're going to kind of hate yourself that we didn't make this our New Year's resolution.
I think it's fair to say here that in Schaefer Financial, they deal the huge percent, maybe close to 100%, with federal employees.
We have our federal employees and our international bank employees. That's our little, that's our sweet spot.
Okay. Yep. That's important, I think, for the listener. So This isn't Karen with an idyllic way to look at things. She's got boots on the ground.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And here's the what I think most people who have the New Year's resolution that they want to pay off their debt, but it's so depressing to even think about it. I've yet to meet a situation that didn't improve once somebody made it a priority. I've yet to meet that unless they've waited too long, right? Okay. So there's always something that we can do.
One more approach to this, and then this uh-huh. person that, you know, has every dollar they make going to service debt and the like, and they go, well, what little I can save, I'd just be terrified that if I lost it, I'd never invest again.
So that's another New Year's resolution that I'd like to talk about, Bob, right? When it comes to investing, I still hear too often, Karen, I don't mind getting the money in the thrift plan, but I got to leave it in the G fund because that's the one that doesn't lose. And once you become a thrift participant, you owe it to yourself, Bob, to understand how the investment world works. There's something called a realized loss and an unrealized loss. It's only a realized loss if I actually sell when the value is down, right? But every account on any given day, unless it's sitting in the G fund, has the potential to be worth less than it was the last time you looked at it. And this is not bad news, because guess what happens when we're thrift participants? Until we retire, we're still adding. So this is a really important resolution for some people to adopt. The thou shalt not panic sell, thou shalt not overthink allocation decisions resolution. When we decide how to allocate our thrift plan, it's based primarily on the time frame for when we're going to spend the money. It is not based on whether Harry and Meghan are leaving along with the UK, the economy as they've known it. It's not based on what the heck is going over on Iran and or whether or not impeachment means something to the economy. It's based on stocks outperform bonds, bonds outperform cash on a very long-term basis without guarantees, but phenomenal track record. So we go for growth.
Okay, I'm going to ask you two questions.
All right.
After your good tutelage, somebody believes, and again, you've got a pedigree in it, but they don't make the money that they thought they would make in the short term.
Of course.
What do they do?
Well, who needs to make it in the short term?
Well, I understand that. But
right. So that's what. So if I'm going to be, if my New Year's resolution is to be better at allocating my thrift plan, then my job is to first allocate by time frames. So I can go into the market, the stock market. In the thrift plan, you really only have two markets to choose from, the bond market, which we don't really need for a long time. While we're working, certainly most of us just ignore it. Even the life cycle funds kind of ignore it. So we're really looking at the stock market when we're allocating our thrift plan, and the stock market can, does, will go up and down. I only need it to be up the day I'm actually selling to spend, right? So if I'm still working and if I have a pension and a Social Security check that I know I'm going to have, a lot of my thrift money is really long-term money. And I also have to debuse myself of this notion that I'm not losing money in the G fund, because I am. If money is only what we can exchange it for, the money in the G fund earns such a low interest rate, and the vast majority of the money is in the traditional thrift. So what does that mean? You got to pay tax when you pull it out. And my expenses cost me more in the future. My barometer, I'm really old, so my barometer for measuring inflation is what I pay for a cup of coffee. It used to be coffee and a donut, but I'm so old I can't eat donuts anymore. I get too fat, right? So I just follow a cup of coffee. And even without the latte, my cup of coffee cost me so much more today than it did when I was finally realizing, hey, I'm a working girl. I can afford to buy my coffee when I'm out, right? My mother lived to be 95. What's a cup of coffee going to cost? When I'm 95, if I leave my money in the G fund, I'll have a bunch of dollars, but they won't buy as many cups of coffee for me as the money I have in the G fund today would buy. So I'm losing money in the G fund if I leave it there long term. little bit of money in the G fund for peace of mind. Some people keep a little money in the G fund because it keeps them from that panic sell. But the best resolution is I'm going to go for growth with all of my long-term money, money I know I don't need to spend anytime soon. And when the market drops or the headlines are scary, I'm going to go, look at me buying on sale, right? It's a good thing as long as I'm working.
Okay. Well, talking about planning, we need to take a break. And the sponsor of the show, WEPA, is going to come on and they're going to tell the listeners what WEPA is all about.
WEPA is a proud sponsor of For Your Benefit, presented by NITP Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Federal open season is over, but there's never been a better time to reevaluate your life insurance coverage. Get life insurance for less with WEPA. WEPA has been insuring the future of federal employees for more than 75 years. WEPA can be used as a supplement or replacement for your existing policy and costs up to 89% less than Fegley. In fact, last year, members who switched saved $375 on average. Although open season is over, you can apply anytime for WEPA Group Term Life Insurance. See how much you could save by visiting waepa.org today.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here January 13th with Karen Schaefer, certified financial planner, knower of all things federal, boots on the ground knowledge. And I'd love, before we go on the air and during the air, the war stories, without names, without sex even. It's, you know, this person. So one of the questions that came in says, what does your guest believe is the right allocation of bonds to stocks upon retirement?
I love the question because it assumes that there's a formula, and if I just do enough research, I'll find the formula, and then I don't have to think again. And of course, in personal financial planning, it doesn't work quite that way. So clearly, when the when we talk about stocks and bonds in retirement, we're talking about mitigating the volatility risk of the stock. Stocks and bonds actually have very correlated tied together performance. They go up and down at relatively the same time. When they differ, the one or the other goes, whoops, kidding, and they get back in sync with one another. But the difference is intensity. Stocks have a tendency to rock and roll their way through history, and bonds are doing kind of an easy listening version right through the middle. So if I put stocks and bonds in my portfolio, even when both are struggling with price, they're both kind of dropping a bit, the bonds have a guaranteed income thing. They got to pay some money. And it has the effect of filling up the crater that my stocks created. So a stock and bond portfolio will have a lower downside risk than just a stock portfolio. It doesn't drop as much, right? Well, that sounds very pleasant. The problem is, of course, when stocks and bonds are recovering, stocks go up way more than the bonds. So in good years, bonds are pulling down performance. In bad years, bonds are the hero, making it not quite so bad, right? So do I put some bonds in a portfolio for somebody who's retiring? I think everybody wants to take the edge off. But a federal government employee has something that I personally, you personally, don't have. Once a federal government employee retires, they have guaranteed predictable income. It's called their federal pension, right? With how much market risk? Zero. They're also going to get their little Social Security check or supplement. And what people angst about is there that Social Security lockbox someplace, but it's come pretty darn steadily for ever since inception with no market risk. So a federal government employee, if you think about it that way, if you think about the, one of the reasons why we have the bonds in there is to mitigate the volatility, a federal government employee who retires already has that. So we don't often have to reach for the bonds as quickly as we would for a self-employed person who goes from making okay income down to just a little Social Security check. It would be that person doesn't have the steady income coming in, maybe just has to tighten up on discretionary spending to get by a bad stock market year, right?
Tell that to a self-employed person.
I'm very familiar with that temperament, right? The other thing, though, is that there's another just because somebody's retiring doesn't mean they're eating into their investments yet. Some people retire after very long careers and their pension and Social Security check replace a lot of their salary, and they're good to go. Some people go right from retirement into second career because they were bored or they had an interesting opportunity or they needed the money. Some people retire in their 50s with short life expectancy. Some people retire in their 50s with 40 years life expectancy. So I'm not trying to dodge the question, which clearly wants me to throw out a formula. I'm trying to point out that in personal financial planning, we got to know all that stuff. We have to know what's your likely life expectancy. We have to know whether or not you're going to be in the workforce just to supplement or because you're afraid your brain is a use it or lose it body part. And we have to have a sense of when we're really going to tap these resources, this investment pool, to supplement standard of living.
Okay, I'm going to ask you another question, but I think the listeners should know you've been at this with the federal employee for how many years?
41 years.
Okay, so 41. So yeah.
I've seen a few market cycles. I've seen a few, more than a few. I've federal government thrift millionaires, and I've met really nervous people, and I've met really frightened people. But for the most part, I meet an awful lot of people who have questions that have answers and their finances improve.
I think we go back to 35 years.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I've learned a lot from Karen over the years. So here we go. Somebody comes in and sits down with Karen or Rick or both and say, I know I have to do something, mm-hmm. but I don't have any money to do it. Or they got a fear factor. How do you get them off the diving board?
Well, it's not so much if somebody that's two different people just walked in. You know, when somebody's really nervous about getting invested, I want to find out what's the source of that, right? If they've really some people have really made some mistakes, and so we can show them where the mistake was, and we can coach them around making that again. If somebody's just nervous by temperament or nervous, but we can just start moving in slowly. I mean, there's no, if there's a pot of money that we all agree intellectually isn't going to be spent for another 20 years, that needs to go in the market. But there's no rule that says it has to go in today. We can move in over the next 12, 24, 36 months, and it's still a better financial plan every month along the way than it was when we were sitting there paralyzed by that fear, right? Sometimes people really just are uninformed. I was talking to the group. I love this group. They're Department of Agriculture, and they're like the Foreign Service officers of the Department of Agriculture. So they're interesting people, and they live around the world. One person just kind of came up to me during a break and said, "But Karen, I can't take risk." I said, we all take risk. You got in your car and came to work. You managed. You wore your seatbelt. You didn't drive like a crazy person. You didn't do any texting. That's managing risk. I can teach you how to manage investment risk. But the most important thing is that New Year's resolution we just talked about. Thou shalt not overthink. Thou shalt not panic sell. Thou shalt keep my eye on the long term, and then educate yourself with the difference that can make. I don't know if I've told this you this story before, but I met someone who was retiring from Department of State at 57, and she had fully funded her thrift plan, but only done the G fund. And her excuse was, well, you know, Karen, I'm a linguist. What do I know about investing? She had about $400,000 in a thrift plan, which is real money, but it is not enough to call it a career. Same day, I met somebody, 57, who had fully funded her thrift plan, and she had $1.2 million. Well, I don't think enough people know the story there, right? That if we start our investment with how we feel about things, everybody's nervous. Everybody's uncertain. Nobody loves the mystery and the lack of guarantees. But if I start with, this is what happens when I take a little bit of risk that I can afford, I might be willing to take that step.
These two people sound like they're FERS people?
Yes, definitely okay. FERS people.
All right.
Yep. Who, you know, they came from a background where they knew they had to save, and I love that. But there's such a big difference between learning how to take a little market risk, which would be going for stock performance in your thrift plan, as opposed to, well, I'm just putting it in G. You know, one of the great things that's happened in the thrift plan recently is if you're a new hire today, instead of the 1% agency contribution, even if you never signed up for thrift plan, something's going in there. Instead of it going into G or the default position for anything you put in until you pick something, be the G fund, it's now an L fund that coincides with when you would be chronologically eligible to retire. So young people right out of school are going into that new 2060 fund, which is 99% stock, which is woohoo, everybody. This is where you belong.
And right? this is the product of the thrift.
It is.
Okay.
It's the coolest thing ever.
And just for the listeners, in case they miss that.
Yeah. But, you know, there was another part of that question you asked me that emailed the 4% rule.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we all hear, if you've ever come to class or if you've read any articles about retiring, it's been out since the early 90s. If I keep my spending in retirement to 4% plus inflation, I ought to be able to keep from running out of money. This is basically what that 4% rule mm-hmm. is all about. So to really know what that means, you have to know what the assumptions are, right? If I had $100,000 that I was willing to spend to zero in my lifetime, and I spent $4,000 in year one, which is 4%, right, of $100,000, and then in the next year I spent $4,000 plus inflation, odds are overwhelming the money lasts 30 years. And overwhelming that it's completely gone somewhere between 30 and 35 years. So that's good to know. So anybody who's looking at their thrift plan, or if I add this much, if I do take this cost of living allowance and instead of incorporating it into my cash flow where it won't be all that exciting, I put it in my thrift plan where it can grow and be exciting, go play with the calculators on the thrift website and see, wow, if I really then retired at whatever age, right, and I had a thrift plan this big, what's 4% of that? And I'll have that plus my pension, my Social Security check for a first person. Wow, this looks pretty cool, right? And that does make sense. That 4% rule is worth it if that's how we use it, just to get motivated or to get a little sense of what does it mean to my retirement. What we can't do with the 4% is assume that I'm going to spend 4% no matter what the market's doing, and never think again. I'm year one of my retirement, and I don't have to think because I can calculate what 4% is. And next year, I'll just use that same number and see what CPI is, and that's inflation, and I'll just add it up. Because one of the assumptions is that it's okay to be out of money in 30 years. For some people, we don't need to make it last that long. For some people, oh, slow down. That's not long enough for you, oh, healthy one with the incredible gene pool that you were born into. Another assumption is that at least half the money is in stocks. Well, what if, just my luck, the first couple of years that I'm retired, the stock market is correcting, which is another way of saying collapsing, right? And I'm still taking money out because this little formula said I can take out 4%. That just taking money out in a down market as a young retiree means you got no chance the money's going to last 30 years. So this is how I would recommend you use the 4% rule that was calculated in the early 90s once computers got fast. Use it as sort of a litmus test. Am I saving at a pace in my thrift plan? Am I allocating it enough to growth to get to a big enough thrift plan where 4% of it is kind of a cool number, or am I way behind and I need to beef it up? But once you're a retired person, we're going to get much more specific about what's a reasonable amount for you to spend. You know, heck, sometimes I say we're going to spend more than 10% because we've got this unique opportunity, or rats, we have a big problem. But then in the years after that, we don't spend anything for a while.
Okay, so I'm a member of the Karen and Rick fan club.
Okay.
And I just kind of sort of don't understand this. And this is a question that came in. He said, okay, how important is it to convert a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA with higher taxes looming in our future?
So as much as I would love to find a formula that everybody just follows, and here's your answer on when you convert a traditional, any kind of retirement account to a Roth account, it doesn't exist, because part of that formula has to be what our tax law is going to be in the future. And you're the tax guy in the room. I don't know is the answer.
It's the only answer I got.
Yeah, and it's a good one. And here's the one neither one of us can answer, and we got a lot of experience between the two of us. How long are you going to live? Take your time. Be specific. What's the answer? I don't know. I have reasonable assumptions. I know my average life expectancy, right? But I can still walk in front of a bus while texting. So we don't know how. You can't make a huge, big deal tax decision based on a formula or a rule of thumb or a radio show you listened to or an article you read and know that you got it. You nailed this one, right? Because I don't know is still a big part of it. I'm not convinced that higher tax rates are looming in front of us in the next year, decade, millennium, only because I think there's other ways they can tax us. I just bought an airline ticket for an overseas flight. You know, the ticket seemed okay. The taxes and the fees and the, you know, that was another third. So there's lots of other ways that money can involuntarily come out of my pocket if I assume it's always going to be an income tax based on the way we've done it more traditionally. I think we might rue the day we paid a bunch of income tax, which is what happens when you do a conversion. Traditional account into a Roth account triggers all the taxes due up until that moment to theoretically give you tax-free income going forward. What if they change that rule? What if somebody who has a federal pension and a Social Security check makes too much money in some tax law of the future to be allowed to take total advantage of tax-free withdrawals from Roth accounts? I mean, I don't mean to be too cynical, but certainly could happen.
Sure.
My Social Security check is taxable now. It never used to be. But here's the one I don't think enough people think about. I got some pretty old clients. I mean, really old clients. And I love them all. I call them with great affection my seniors, but they are getting frail, Bob, and they need help. And that help, that care, is not going to be covered under their their health insurance. Those costs, these people didn't have long-term care insurance as an option for them, the current generation of my seniors. And anybody buying long-term care insurance today is probably going to be a 5-year benefit at the most. We're going to burn through that, have some happy choices, be glad we had it, but geez, oh, Pete's, right? So I've got clients who are paying $4,000 a month for care, $8,000 a month for care. The current winner of this contest you don't ever want to be in is paying $16,000 a month for care, all deductible. Guess what their tax bracket is?
Zero.
Thank you. Wouldn't you hate to do a conversion today when we're all in pretty high tax brackets and we're all grumbling about it, to find out when you've lived long enough to get the advantage of this tax-free withdrawal, you're in a zero tax bracket? Don't worry, you won't remember. We'll all be demented by then. But here's the thing. I can't find me a formula for doing these conversions, which is not the same as saying anybody who's converting some money or anybody who's telling you to convert some money is so far off the ranch that this is a huge mistake. But I am not an all or nothing on this one. I would be very careful about paying taxes today because I assume I'm going to be in a higher tax bracket tomorrow.
This is a perfect time for a break.
I think I'm exhausted by the thought of that.
Okay. You certainly should listen to the commercial. It's for NITP, which doesn't sell anything, but it was a profound place to stop.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away?
It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here with Karen Schaefer, keeping us captivated with the comments and how they really draw a parallel to either our life or people that we know with regards to financial planning. Now, at the break, you mentioned something about 1950.
Yeah, so I want to shout out to anybody born in 1950. This is your big year to start. Join us, those of us of a certain middle age, in the catch-up provision. Now, that catch-up provision is so poorly named. I just met somebody last week, and these are educated people thinking they're on it, right, who said, well, I can't do the catch-up because I've never missed a contribution. And this is not how this works. Okay, so a catch-up provision is something that was born out of tax law that allows people who are 50 or turning 50 in the calendar year, so that's anybody born in 1950 this year, so can add a little bit more to their qualified retirement plans. With the thrift plan, right, once you turn 50 or intend to turn 50 this year, you can put in a little extra money. But you have to re-elect that every year. And it might be, if you just look at it and then say, well, now you can put in $7,000. I don't know a lot of people who have an extra $7,000 just hanging around, but you got to get in the habit of doing it. So elect to put in what you can. Divided over. Is this a 25 pay period year, Bob? I think it might be. I got to look that up.
I believe it is.
Okay. So, and we've, you know, by the time you get around to acting on this, maybe there's only 24 pay periods, but let's divide whatever you think, if you were born in 1950, that you can put in up to the $7,000 maximum, and then make sure you do that every year, that you reelect it. I know you're always going to be over 50, but the way that the thrift is set up, you have to remind them because it's an election. So you have to reelect to do it every year. So that's a New Year's resolution for anybody born in 1950. Get on the catch up. I can also do it with my IRAs if I'm still contributing to an IRA or if I have a significant other having the big 50 birthday this year, and they participate in a 401k plan, a 403b plan, TIA CREF, you know, all these different kinds of qualified plans. Everybody has the same opportunity to just show off a little bit or get a little more serious about stacking the deck in your favor. This is the way you accumulate wealth. Money grows faster if it's in a tax-protected pocket, so let's get it in there.
Okay, so brag a little bit. What was your greatest, let's say, disappointment with, you know, dealing with a client? You felt they were normal. We're not going to deal with the people outside the norm that could have done something financially but just couldn't do without the lattes or couldn't do without the cars or couldn't do without the vacations.
You know what? My biggest disappointment is when I'm talking to a couple, married or otherwise, and their communication style is the problem because that steps beyond what I'm qualified and clearly skilled to do, is to get a couple to back down and really see this is not a money problem. This is a you're blaming each other and not communicating fully kind of problem. And it really is my biggest disappointment because it hurts so many people. You know, people don't want to be angry with each other. This person you love, right? You don't want to be seeing relationships fall apart or kids seeing, you know, their parents fight about money. It's just, it has such a sad ripple effect, and it goes beyond strict financial planning. I do have a psych major, and I do wade into the swamp a little bit if I feel I can help. But the fact of the matter is there's this new profession out there, and they're counselors who are really specializing in getting people to talk. Mm. Sometimes it's up and down the family tree, right? It's not necessarily a couple, but things are going off the rails or becoming way more expensive, or, you know, I can see the train wreck and I can't fix it without better communication skills. I will say that Rick had a great success story once. It was exactly this. So a couple where they were working really, really hard, and there's really no discretionary money, but one of the parents was spending money in a discretionary way because they're working so hard, you deserve it. Life, you know, who knows? I might not live a long time, and everybody deserves a nice pair of shoes every once in a while, or the latte. And Rick just kind of, in his way, and you know Rick well enough to know he's not the hammer guy, but he just kept saying, you got to do this for your family. You got to do this for your family. And this parent, a couple of weeks went by and said, you know, I was so angry in that meeting because you're kind of telling my partner that they're right. But I never framed it that way, that this is about my family. And I just want you to know that these are the changes that I've made. And my family is going to be better off. We're taking a little step backwards, but our future is much brighter. So that's what made me realize that the limits of financial planning really are in that behavioral communication style. And so, you know, if I had my magic wand, I'd be getting my PhD in that and becoming, with all my copious free time. And being a little more skilled.
I was going to say that free time and do you need more initials next to your name?
No, I don't. I really don't. But I am encouraging the profession to get there. And it will. You know, somebody who sits for the CFP exam today takes much more, has to show competency in client counseling much more than I did when I, just a while ago, sat for that exam. And that's a nice thing about an evolving profession, that we really can, we're not stuck in our silo, right? We're really trying to do this right.
Okay. And you've been involved turning the wrenches on that.
I have. And it's been a highlight for me because I have my own little business, but I get to learn from everybody who's running their financial planning practices and get a voice at the table when we need to make some changes.
Okay. Yeah, let's look. Do we have one more? Let's do one more question from the great question asker.
Okay.
How important is a rainy day fund and how many months should it cover?
Yeah, so if you're taking a little My Money IQ quiz and you saw an answer that said 3 to 6 months worth of, and sometimes it's called fixed expenses or fixed overhead, that's probably the right answer, right? And that's for a rule of thumb. But remember, I'm the personal financial planner. So the way I look at it, somebody who's driving a really old, almost not safe car needs more of a rainy day fund than somebody who doesn't need a car for day-to-day life, right? Somebody who's getting ready to help a child with an expensive education needs way more money set aside than somebody who their kids are going to pay their own way or not raising a family or been there, done that. And if you think about it this way, Bob, I could just go on and on and on. So rather than think about what's the right rule of thumb for a rainy day fund, you know, what if I have an emergency or what the heck? I like to be prepared for fun stuff that comes along. You just told me that the Tina Turner play in Broadway was outstanding, and I can't stop thinking about how am I going to get to New York, right? So I want to be prepared for fun stuff as well. Let me just make a list of my big ticket, irregular, wish listy sorts of things, right? Anybody can do that. We call those financial goals, but it doesn't matter what you call them. Just jot them down someplace. Use a spreadsheet, use a Word document, use a little My Little Financial Planning notebook. Doesn't seem to matter. But once you've got them all in one place, two things. One, line them up chronologically from the most immediate to the next to the next to the next. And two, put a star on the thing or things that are absolutely essential and most important to you. We prioritize a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now I've got my goals. Okay, so this year I want to take a couple of fun trips. And this year Rick has his idea of home maintenance projects and I have mine. And this year I want to, you know, do a little bit of charitable giving. And this year, big ticket, irregular, wish listy sorts of things that we know are going to happen. And we're just going to put them in a timeline so that we're not doing it all at once and realizing, whoops, don't have enough money for the mortgage, right? We're going to put a little space in between these things. But if this is a goal that's going to happen in the next 5 years, I got to make sure that I either already have the money set aside. So it's not really a rainy day fund. It's a I'm prepared for what I know is going to happen fund, right? And or I've got a little schedule where I'm building it up, right? It's already sitting there, or I'm building it up at a pace that makes me comfortable that when Rick replaces his car in a couple of years, we're not going to be at the mercy of, I wonder what kind of interest rates there are for loans, right? Mm-hmm. Might take a loan, might not, but I don't want to hope it all works out. Well, now look at what kind of money you have set aside or what kind of process you have for building money. We have a lot of emergencies covered. Being prepared for what I know or want to have happen pretty much takes care of this notion that I got to be prepared for an emergency with a rainy day fund. I've built in a beautifully sweet shock absorber. So if I really do end up with a root canal and a sore mouth, I'm going to pay the dentist and maybe put Tina Turner off until the fall, right? That I just find is a practical matter. You keep talking about my boots on the ground. This works way better than holding people to some rule of thumb, not letting them invest until we've got 6 months worth of whatever sitting there and missing out on a lot of life's opportunities.
Wow. Okay.
Okay, fine.
I don't have any more questions after that. What do we want to do that we haven't done?
You know, we never talk about the Secure Act, and we did say that we should talk about that. I hate it when laws get passed at the end of the year and get implemented at the beginning of the next year. It's like, what? My head is spinning. What's going on with that?
And they're still figuring it out.
What
did it pass 2 days before the end of the year?
Yeah. So stay tuned. The last time I looked at the Thrift website, it said we're looking into it, which is a very sane approach. But we've already gone through some of our material at Schaefer Financial. And kind of the two big things are the RMD age, you know, used to be 70 and a half.
They
pushed it back a year and a half, which I'm a little disappointed with on the one hand, because that half birthday party was something I really encouraged for everybody. But I'm really happy that everybody gets another year and a half to accumulate wealth and to contribute a little bit more, which is nice. No grandfathering, but it'll be a cleaner way to do the planning around the 72.
Only because I'm an Itinoid accountant,
yes.
There are some people that don't get to do
I
this.
Know.
Okay.
They got caught.
This is a very small percentage, but.
Right. Yeah, I know. And we could probably figure out when their birthdays were. And I know. but that just seemed to me like a cool little bonus thing. And I'm, you know, there are people who are enjoying their work, who are working longer. And when you get to be that age, rather than give, you know, take money out of an IRA or a retirement account, pay the tax on it and give it to charity, if we've got the money in an IRA, we can have that money go directly to a qualified charity. And it doesn't get tangled up on your tax return, and it ends up being a more generous gift. But there's paperwork involved. So
paperwork, and if one wants to maximize it, it's pretty high. It's $100,000.
Right. Yeah. But I wouldn't do it for a couple hundred bucks,
right?
Because the paperwork is it slows it down. But I would do it if I'm getting ready to make a more substantial gift because I've been blessed and I feel that's the least I should do. It's really smart planning to do it from an IRA.
I think if we go out a little bit further than the 70 and a half, if one retires at that point and somebody inherits those assets,
that's another difference.
A 10-year payout.
So that was the part of the Secure Act that I was surprised by. I hadn't heard the rumblings on that, or maybe I was not wanting to hear the rumblings on that. Under the old law, or before the Secure Act passed, if I inherited an IRA, I was required to make a minimum distribution, but it was based on my age. Then there were some exceptions for spouses and all of that. But generally, once we're getting down to the next generation, the person who inherits the IRA has to start taking some money out based on their own life expectancy. So my dad dies at 76. He leaves it to his 75-year-old bride. She does required minimum distributions till 95, and more than required minimum when she got a little expensive for her care. But then my 60-year-old sister inherits it. She doesn't really need the money. She's still working. She'll just do required minimum distributions. And then her, who knows how long my sister will live, but her younger daughter would be then stretching it again, because my sister would have no need to deplete this account. And even if it's not a lot of money that you inherit, only having to take out a minimum and keep leaving it invested for growth, it's kind of amazing how long these accounts could have been building. That all changed.
I think they called that RMD with an emphasis on M.
Right, right. The minimal distribution. So clearly, if you inherited an IRA in your 20s or 30s and invested conservatively for growth, it would grow faster than the required minimum distribution. Now, if I inherited money from an IRA or you, anybody, you don't have to take the required minimum distribution. You just have to make sure that it's all liquidated out of the tax-protected bubble in 10 years.
So it's not a requirement, but by the end of the 10th year,
it all, you pay all the tax. So you're probably going to want to do a little bit every year for 10 years.
And Andrew just said to us, if you all want to keep talking, you'll be talking to dead air in about a minute and
a
half.
He's good that way.
Oh, he's the best.
Yeah.
He's just the best.
Yeah. So I think there are going to be some little things that come out of this SECURE Act that planners will jump on as best practices, you know, for inherited IRAs. This is what we start with. We're going to take out 10% a year for 10 years, unless you've got a unique situation where there's a powerful need or a powerful opportunity to go beyond that.
Okay. Final thoughts?
Final thoughts. Enjoy the new year. Be proud of yourself. Make a change for the better for yourself, because it will help you and everybody who knows and loves you really do it with that thrift plan.
Okay. We couldn't end on a better comment. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back next week. Andrew, thanks for steering us through the breaks and whatnot. And again, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.